This is Peace Talks Radio, the series on peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution. I'm Paul Ingalls. In his more recent public appearances, Tibetan leader the Dalai Lama has been targeting his peace and compassion message to young people. To him, teaching compassion and peace to our young is the best hope for peace in the future. We continue our look at efforts to teach peace in the schools, this time on Peace Talks Radio. Later, a program in some Seattle schools called Bridges to Understanding connects young people from classrooms across the globe. But up next, a journalist turned teacher who's been on a one-man crusade to bring peace curriculum to schools in the Washington, D.C. area. From 1969 to 1997, Coleman McCarthy wrote columns for the Washington Post. In his years as a columnist and journalist, he had the opportunity to interview Nobel Peace Prize winners and other figures that he says inspired him in 1982 to begin teaching courses on nonviolence and the literature of peace in high schools and universities in the D.C. area. In 25 years, he's taught more than 7,000 students in his classes. He's edited two books for use in peace studies classes. And in 1985, he founded the Center for Teaching Peace, a nonprofit organization that helps schools begin or expand academic programs in peace studies. From his home in Washington, D.C., Coleman McCarthy spoke with Carol Boss.
So, Coleman, I read this article about you. It was in Teacher Magazine in October 2003, and the opening passage reads, "Coleman McCarthy knows an easy way to get people riled up. He merely suggests they consider peace." What is that about? The idea of peace riling people up?
Well, we live in a society where the word peace is looked on with some often negative spin on it. Peace means you're not patriotic. Peace means you're passive. Peace means you like to hug trees at high tide and full moon. yet, each of us in our heart is yearning for peace. All governments claim they want peace. So I began to wonder, if that's the case, why are we teaching ourselves how to go about it? And so I thought the only place to find out is to go into a school and teach a course in the philosophy of peace, the history of peace, the methods of nonviolence, the philosophy of pacifism, and see whether that could be taught and whether it could be learned and whether students would be receptive to it.
Let's talk about your experience in the classroom. Would you be able to articulate your philosophy of teaching peace, your method of teaching?
Sure. We have two textbooks, which I edited, and I spent a few years gathering up all the best essays I could find about pacifism and nonviolence. And one book is called Solutions to Violence, which has about 16 chapters and really good material. Gandhi, Dorothy Day, A.J. Musty, Joan Baez, all the great people, the Berrigans, all the great peacemakers. Strength Through Peace is the other book, and that's about the ideas and ideals of nonviolence. And my center markets those books. We supply schools all around the country with textbooks, those two textbooks. So you read the literature and find out that there are other ways to solve your conflicts without using fists, guns, armies, bombs, and nukes. It's just one course. I mean, you go to school, you go 8 years in elementary school, 4 years of high school. Would we ever think of putting anybody through a 12 years of education with no math course or no course in science or history or English? You get it every year. So just to get one course out of 12 years, it takes all this pushing and persuading people to get it into the curriculum. But I lecture all around the country to get school. I do student assemblies. I do teacher training workshops to interest schools and administrators on the importance of teaching peace to our students. Because unless we teach our students peace, somebody else will teach them violence.
Mm-hmm. How do you respond when there's a challenge or a call for the other side, a call for balance to teaching peace?
Sure. Students come into my class already indoctrinated in the philosophy of violence. We have a violent government that believes in invading countries. We're the world's largest weapons dealer. We have a Supreme Court that advocates executing people on death row. We have corporations polluting the environment, which is environmental violence. We have domestic violence. We have verbal violence. We have gender-based violence. We have racial violence. So my class is the other side. So they're getting the violent argument every place they go.
You know, I would imagine that perhaps at the beginning when people enter, young people enter your classes, there might be some degree of skepticism on their part. Is that true, and how do you deal with that?
Oh, sure. They often come from dysfunctional families. Mm-hmm. I had a student one time, we spent about 3 weeks reading Gandhi. At the end of 3 weeks, she was leaving class one morning and said, "This has all been fine, but you know, I go home to a war zone. My parents are fighting each other, either verbally or physically. How do I stop that war?" Well, good question. Maybe if we'd had her mother and father when they were in school and taught them how to deal with their basic conflicts, they wouldn't be fighting so much. It's much easier to teach a child to be peaceful than to repair a violent adult. So either we educate before people have conflicts, or we intervene after with more violence. So I'm for the first. I think education is the way to do it. So that's where the peace movement needs to be. I'm all for anti-war marches, but the marches don't do it. You go into classrooms and systematically educate people. I think that's the best way to go about it, and the most effective way, and the most moral way.
What do you consider a successful, maybe I should say, valuable day at school?
When parents call me or see me and say, "You know, we often discuss your class at dinner time." If the students will do that with their families, then you know that they're interested, they're involved. How many students go home and talk about algebra with their parents? Mm-hmm. I doubt very many. But they do go home and talk about their conflicts. They talk about things we talk about with the class, because it's relevant to their lives. Everybody wants to lead a peaceful life. And so when you can talk about that in the classroom and have that discussion continued at home, that's when you know you've done something.
Can you think of a story offhand of a student who gave you feedback, who's in your class, that was kind of striking for you, or even surprising?
I had a student in my class many years ago, a boy named Jim McGovern. I had him in college, and Jim was a fine boy, but he studied too much. He's making too many A's. I said, "Jim, you got to get out." I sent him down. I suggested he go work at a women's shelter here in town that takes in homeless women, many from El Salvador, from Central America. He went there, and he started to talk with the women from Salvador. At the time, Jim McGovern was working for Congressman Joseph Moakley from Boston, Massachusetts. And he'd go back and tell Joe Moakley about the women from El Salvador. This was in the mid-1980s when there was a civil war in El Salvador. Jim McGovern began taking Congress people down to El Salvador to figure out what was going on and why is the U.S. supplying weapons to the government. Jim McGovern helped inform Congress of what was happening. He also decided that he was just as smart as members of Congress are. He ran for Congress, was defeated the first time, came back and ran again, and won. He's now a member of Congress, has been there for the last, I think, 8 years, and is one of the leading Democrats to bring the troops home from Iraq. That's a former student of mine of whom I am tremendously proud, and I remember Jim with great affection.
So, Coleman, there are probably people that believe and actually state that peace studies is something that should be taught at home with the family or in the church. And I'm wondering if you do hear that and how you do respond to that.
You can make the same argument that we ought to teach algebra at home or physics or history at home. You can make the same argument to many different academic subjects. The history of nonviolence is vast. The philosophy of pacifism has to be studied systematically like any other academic subject. And so there's no difference between the information you get from a peace class as you get from a mathematics class. That's all we're doing is providing information, and then you process that and use it any way you want. You might want to reject it. Some people want to reject algebra. Some people don't want to learn physics. So take your choice. And keep in mind, we only go to school for a few years. I always tell people that the purpose of school is to light fires so that long after you leave us, you'll still be burning. And so if I do a good job in the classroom, they will go home and think about it on their own and hopefully apply the theories that we debate and discuss and put them into their own lives and see where it takes them.
Well, it's really interesting how the whole idea of peace studies seems to be so threatening to people and so troubling to folks.
Well, I was at a school board meeting a few years ago, and I said we ought to get peace studies courses into the county's 22 high schools. And finally, at the end, one of the school board members said, well, these are all good ideas, but, you know, you kept using that phrase, peace studies. I have a little trouble with that, he said. I said, what's your problem? Well, the problem is the word studies is okay, but that word peace is going to upset people out here in the county. That's where we are. So peace education is in its infancy. We're just starting out now, really. And it's very hard to crack schools with this idea because the teachers are so demoralized right now with all this testing mania going on. Teaching to the test, get the test scores up in math and science. So a course like mine is looked on as kind of a gourmet item. It's a nice idea, but we got to stick with these so-called essentials. And I argue that nothing is more essential than to how to turn around our world from a violent world to a peaceful world. But that thinking has not really been adopted by too many people. But I keep pushing away, and there is some progress. In 1970, we only had one school, only one college in America was offering a degree program in peace studies, and now there's about 70. There's over 200 colleges offering a minor or a concentration. So there is progress in a small way, so we keep trying to move it ahead.
I imagine there are teachers and others out there, concerned parents, concerned citizens, who want to advocate for peace education in their school systems, and teachers who want to incorporate some elements of peace into their classrooms and are feeling isolated and alone. Can the Center for Teaching Peace offer advice and support to all of these people?
Well, that's what we do. That's one of our main functions, helping people get these courses into the schools. I work with teachers, principals, school boards, families, parents, students, to persuade the school officials to take seriously peace education. People have a right to have these courses in place. I mean, public schools are paid by property taxes. And so you got to go make your demands. I tell students that great line from Peter Kropotkin, the great Russian pacifist. He told students, my advice is to think about the kind of world you want to live and work in, what you need to build that world, a demand that your teachers teach you that. Students have more power than they realize. I always tell high school folks that nobody ought to graduate from high school without organizing at least one student strike. You find out a lot about power. And you find out there's two types of teachers in schools. There are those who want power over the students and those who want power with the students. And the students are looking for the latter. They want teachers who want to have power with them. To bring about a peaceful society, a more just society, and a more humane society. But students can bring this about. Organize the student strikes. Hey, we want our school to offer some peace courses. And that's been happening. I've seen some examples of that. A Mother Teresa told me one time, don't ever worry about being successful. Just worry about being faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think all of us can take heart with that line. And a very few of us will ever be called on to do great things. But all of us can do small things in a great way.
You had a student a while back, a few years ago, at the University of Maryland, and you tell about him writing a 13-word paper. And that really stuck with you.
I asked the class one time for our final exam, I asked them, I said, make up your own questions and supply the answers. The question he asked was, why are we violent but not illiterate? Answer, we were taught to read. That's almost pure Buddhist. It's so pure. In other words, we were taught to read in school, therefore we are not illiterate.
Mm-hmm.
We were not taught to be peacemakers, therefore we are violent. It summed it all up in just 13 words. That boy went on to join Teach for America. He's now a journalist and is doing very well with his talents.
That's Coleman McCarthy, author of I'd Rather Teach Peace. For more about him and his Center for Teaching Peace, visit our website, peacetalksradio.com. I'm Paul Ingalls, and next we go to Seattle, Washington, where teacher Lori Markowitz manages Bridges International, an organization which oversees two programs, one called Worlds Apart, Hearts Together, and the other called Bridges to Understanding. Both work in some Seattle schools to promote global understanding and compassion to students. Bridges to Understanding has Seattle school kids connecting with their counterparts in Thailand or South Africa, swapping digital photographs and stories over the internet, and then some get to meet live and in person. Lori Markowitz is in Seattle's KUOW studios along with Talea Thurman, a student who participated in one of the programs. First, Lori Markowitz talking with Carol Boss.
Bridges is about becoming global citizens and better understanding other parts of the world, but also building relationships and getting to know and becoming friends with someone in Peru or a new friend in the township. And it's getting to know that someone that lives in the township has a lot of similar and shares many of the same desires and wishes in their life as you do here. And that's what we found that has been so remarkable with young people, is they say, wow, I didn't realize that Mafeka and I both have the same interest in music or in dance. And then they understand the fact that they are really connected, even though they're across the world from each other.
So what are the goals and the hopes for this program?
So the hopes are, first of all, that we understand that we're all interconnected, and that what happens here in the United States or what happens in South Africa is just as important to the students here in America as well as the students in South Africa. So that we are interconnected, and that the responsibility of our world is really a collective, and it's something that all of us share together. We see that students then, once they understand that there is even just exposing them to other parts of the world. I've had students say, I didn't even know that apartheid exists in South Africa, or that there were students that had the same hopes and aspirations as I do. And so it's just, again, creating awareness and then moving from that awareness onto building relationships, and then with the hopes that one will become actually active in making the world a better place.
And the project that you've been very involved with, what you mentioned before, the Worlds Apart, Hearts Together, that goes beyond the interaction of the internet. It's a face-to-face program. You have brought students over from South Africa for several weeks, and they have paired up with students from Washington Middle School in Seattle.
Essentially, the program is allowing the students to come together. They are students that come from the townships of South Africa. They've never, ever been on an airplane before, so it's the first time they're leaving their country, and often first time they've even leaving their township. And they come here, and they are paired up with host families. They spend 3 weeks in this country, and they shadow their host family student, and then they also engage in several programs during their stay, which are around South Africa, the lessons that we've learned from South Africa, particularly pertaining to the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And there's a big focus on reconciliation and what that meant in South Africa, what it means today. And as well, then the American students are asked to look inside themselves in their own community, in their own hallways, in their school, and to think about how can we apply the lessons that we've learned from South Africa here in our own backyard.
Well, also joining us is Talia Thurman, who has been a student in this program, and you hosted someone from South Africa, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Her name was Spikazi, was that it? Yeah.
What interests you most about it?
I think mainly the cross-cultural exchange, just learning so much about a culture that I knew so little about.
Yeah, you probably had an opportunity to study some cultures in school, but what, you're always learning about the cultures and never had the opportunity to learn it from someone who's actually part of that culture.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so much better. You read textbooks and you can reread them and you could probably recite them by heart, but you never really understand what you're reading until you can actually sit down with somebody who's from there and learn firsthand what their experience is.
So what would you say was unique about this experience for you? Was there anything that really made it special for you?
Really, the entire thing in itself was special, but I think one thing that really stood out was, I think as Laura said before, you meet this person and you have no idea that they share a lot of the same interests as you, but I love acting, and Spikazi, she apparently likes being in front of people, kind of. And so I think that was a pretty cool thing, just learning that we had so much in common and we could sit down and have a conversation and like and be talking about the same things and be able to follow each other, but yet she's from halfway around the world.
Well, Lori mentioned a couple of the issues that were covered in the lessons. Certainly truth and reconciliation. It sounds like you learned about apartheid. Which ones in particular were most interesting to you?
Well, I'd have to say apartheid as a whole, or just the history of South Africa. I had never really known a lot about it before. And so before they came, we did a lot of geography surrounding South Africa and a lot of cultural studies. And we read the Kaffir Boy book, and I think that was a real big eye-opener. I had no idea. Well, I had a little bit of idea, but after reading Mr. Mark Mathabane's accounts of what happened, I think that taught me a lot. I think it changed most of my thinking, and it had one of the biggest impacts from the entire program.
Did you feel that this program gave you an idea or taught you about how to help create peace in the world?
I think it did, definitely, because I think one of the big reasons there isn't a lot of peace, or the world's not so peaceful quite yet, is because you don't really understand, you can't really put yourself in the shoes of another person, and so you hear people like every day, like, yeah, I want to help that person, but they don't know how, and so I think there's a lot of willingness to do it, but just not really knowing how, and so when you meet this other person from somebody else and you can understand them and where they come from and know what they really need, I think that would bring about. I think one thing that reoccurred to me a lot of times was peace through understanding. And so when you understand what they're going through, I think it'd be like the stepping stones for world peace.
So, Lori, I wanted to ask you, what do you see in the Seattle students that perhaps makes you feel that the program is nurturing a culture of peace?
Well, I would have to definitely add on to what Talia said. There's no question that I see a tremendous amount of empathy coming from these students. In fact, I had a mother who stopped me one day. I was just in the supermarket, and she said, "Excuse me, are you the woman who was running the South African program?" And I said, "Yes, oh no, what did I do?" And she said, "Thank you. Thank you so much. My son told me he will never complain again. He feels like he understands the privilege he has living in this country and that he is determined to make a difference in the world and that he understands now that he's empowered to do so. So not only do they empathize with others, but they understand that they have to take action. And we all know that if everyone just gave a little bit, there's no question that the world will be a better place. And I'm also thinking about several of the events we had around helping raise money for the South Africans to come here. And, for example, we had a car wash, and I had probably maybe close to 100 kids that came to help wash cars with the South African kids. So they all did it together. It was just a beautiful day of coming together as one group, raising the money so these South African kids could come here and also go home and have a little, you know, a little extra in their pockets so that they could help with their school fees. And I just felt so rewarded by that. And that now, still to this day, when I see students, they ask me, what can I do? How can I help?
What grade are you in now, Talia, and how old are you?
I am a freshman at Garfield, and I am 14.
So do you have a sense of what you want to work towards and for when you're an adult, what you want to do in the world? Has this given you a perspective on that at this point?
It has. I think I just told Laura that I was pretty envious of her job when we were on our way here. So I think definitely striving towards world peace, that's definitely something that's I've been looking into, not even just as a profession, but I like it a lot as volunteer work and just doing every little thing that I can, like whether it means having a little bake sale or something and sending it to like genocide victims in Rwanda or something.
Did you think about that before you got involved with Bridges to Understanding?
On a smaller scale, I think it was something that came across my mind as something I could do maybe when I wasn't so busy or maybe tomorrow, but tomorrow never came. And I think tomorrow definitely has come now. That's something that I'm become pretty passionate about.
So, Lori, it sounds like there are schools then that are open to this program in Seattle. Is there any resistance at all?
Well, and that's the other thing that I see. I see that the students, the teachers, schools are very hungry for this kind of education. And I think building a culture of peace is becoming more and more apparent how critical that is. And it's not just about academic standards, but it's also about creating global citizens. And this program allows to foster that. And so I see a great desire for this kind of education in the schools.
Lori Markowitz and Talia Thurman, talking with Carol Boss about Seattle's Bridges to Understanding and Worlds Apart, Hearts Together programs. For links to details of the program and more about initiatives to teach peace, visit our website, peacetalksradio.com. That's peacetalksradio.com, where you can also order CDs, sign up for a newsletter or podcast, and make a tax-deductible contribution to help keep talk of peacemaking and nonviolent conflict resolution on the radio and on the web. Really, support from listeners like you is crucial to the survival of this special series. So we hope you'll look for more details at peacetalksradio.com. We receive some support from the Oppenheimer Brothers Foundation, the McCune Charitable Foundation of New Mexico, the Peace Tales CD Project at peacetales.org, Eyecatcher Creative Photography and Custom Framing at the Fair Plaza Shopping Center in Albuquerque, and from KUNM at the University of New Mexico. Our theme music was composed and performed by Ali Adelman. For Carol Boss, I'm Paul Ingles. Thanks for listening to Peace Talks Radio.